Radiolab is supported by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, exercising, cleaning. What if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com, Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
This is Radio Lab. I'm Jad Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Krulwich.
And this hour we are looking at laughter. Whoa.
Oh.
What was that?
That's
okay.
Okay,
here we have the laugh box.
That's a strange little device really that Robert Provine from the University of Maryland played. Remember him from the previous section?
Yeah.
He played it to me, and he has a notion about this.
Yeah, so basically you just need laughter, you know, to cause laughter.
The notion here is you don't need a joke to start the laugh. All you need is a laugh.
You can throw the joke away. Laughter causes laughter.
Well, no, you can't get a laugh going from nothing.
Well, actually you can.
And he said, I'll prove it to you. So he showed me a videotape.
This was in the mall.
Excuse me. We're doing a study on laughter. Is laughter a good thing?
Absolutely.
You laugh a lot.
I laugh every day. I make my wife laugh all the time. She's laughing already.
What do you do that makes him laugh?
Trip.
Spills a lot of things.
One other thing. We have a piece of apparatus here. You push the button, please. Why were you laughing?
I don't know.
Did anyone tell a joke?
No.
Did anyone do anything funny?
No.
I love her.
I don't know.
See, it's true. Provine is absolutely correct about this. What we're dealing here is something that's very contagious.
Each laugh is contagious. Sometimes it's outrageous.
All right, well, while we are on the subject of contagious laughter, I've got a story to tell you.
We laugh till we can get all
great. It's a good one, too.
Okay.
All right, now imagine... You with me?
Yeah.
Okay, imagine 1962.
Where would I go? I was just sitting here.
Your attention, I mean.
Oh, yes.
1962, uh-huh. Rural village of Kishasha, Tanzania, girls' boarding school. Right. Girl is sitting in class.
Mm-hmm.
She begins to laugh. The girl next to her, maybe to her left, hears her laugh, and she begins to laugh. Across the classroom, a third girl joins in. The teacher gets upset, but it's too late. Soon, four girls and eight, the entire class, has begun to laugh and then cry. And then laugh, and then cry, and they...
At what?
Just 'cause, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Anyhow, a girl outside at that moment, walking down the hall, let's imagine she hears the laughter from the classroom. She starts to laugh, and as she walks and laughs, her laughter goes into other classrooms, and soon the whole school is doing this, laughing, crying. Teachers cannot control these girls. When they try to, the girls get violent.
They get violent?
Yep. And the principal then has no choice. He's got to close the school. They open the school a week later, and it happens again. So they close the school a second time. Meanwhile, the girls who started all this, they go back to their villages many, many miles away, and this thing, whatever it is, spreads up and down the coast of Lake Victoria.
You mean people in the villages start to laugh?
Yep. In one village, 217 people start to laugh and cry. A second boarding school has to shut down, and no one knows why. So, a team of doctors, some British doctors in the area, they hop in a Land Rover and they rush out to investigate this strange phenomenon. And this is what they write.
The Central African Journal of Medicine, Volume 9, Number 5, May 1963. The disease commenced on the 30th of January 1962 at a mission-run girls' middle school at Kishasha. The onset is sudden, with attacks of laughing and crying lasting for a few minutes to a few hours, up to a maximum of 16 days, followed by respite, and then a recurrence.
In the report, there is an account of a 52-year-old man who saw some people afflicted with this sickness.
And soon after returning to his hut, he felt something telling him to laugh and cry and shout. This he continued to do for most of the night. No fatal cases have been reported.
This is very... What? Is this true?
Yeah, I mean... Well, okay, we wondered.
Right.
So we sent our producer, Ellen Horn, 40-some-odd years after the fact, to see what she could find.
We're flying to Bacoba.
To be honest, I was a little bit worried that...
I can see the sun setting over Lake Victoria.
That the medical journal article just wasn't true.
Because what I expected was this a total hoax.
Yeah, or that it was some kind of, like, stunt.
I think I'm getting close.
I just sort of doubted the general credibility of the whole thing.
Okay, we've arrived in Bacoba.
Okay, so I get to Bacoba.
This is totally the most beautiful place.
Bacoba is a tiny port town. It's
green and lush.
In this very remote part of northern Tanzania.
Good morning.
And my first step was just to spend a couple of days walking around and asking everybody that I ran into who spoke English.
So I'm asking about...
About this contagious laughter.
Epidemic of laughter.
I guess I imagined... You know, this happened in the 60s, so I'm looking for people who are, like, in their 70s and 80s. Turns out that I didn't need old people. Young people totally knew what I was talking about.
I don't know what you mean.
Because it still happens today.
The first time I saw it, it was in 1991. Yeah.
I went to this tour office, and the first person I met there was this guy named Raymond.
I'm Raymond.
What's your last name?
Mukwenda.
He said he thought he could find me somebody who had had it.
Maybe if you give me 3 hours, I can find out.
Okay, let me give you my phone number.
About an hour later, I get a text from him that says, meet me in a half hour. We hop in his car, we drive off.
So how did you find this person?
I know everybody in town, and everybody knows me.
He's not kidding. Raymond is a former Tanzanian national soccer team star. He's like a local celebrity. Like, kids follow him down the street. So Raymond drives me up this dirt road about 10 minutes. We get to this blue cement building. We sit outside on the porch in these white plastic chairs, and we wait.
Hello.
After about 20 minutes, this woman comes out. Really beautiful. Has a mole on her nose, long eyelashes.
Will we ask her if she'll introduce herself for me?
She's nervously squeezing this plastic water bottle that's in her hand.
Conchesta Anton.
Conchester is her name. She tells me that in her high school, there were 3 girls who were affected. And for all of them, it happened during exams.
Yeah. What, do you remember what the test was?
Mathematics.
It was the morning of the math test. She remembers walking into the exam room. She sat down, she looked at her paper, and suddenly something came over her.
And she started laughing.
And then she took off all her clothes.
She started undressing. And they caught her and took her to hospital.
And then she says she doesn't remember much else from that. She's told that she fought when they tried to restrain her. She spent 3 days in the hospital. They would give her Valium, make her pass out. Then she'd wake up, feel a little bit better for a while, and then it would come on again. And she'd uncontrollably be laughing. Then they would give her more Valium. She'd pass out.
Why do you think this happens, the laughing sickness?
She says it happens for girls who are not free. And so I asked her if she felt free. I'm not even sure what they're talking about. But I asked her if she felt free, and she said, no, when you live with your parents and you're that age, no one's really free. She said she had a boyfriend, and her parents wouldn't let her see him. But in the hospital, when she had the laughing sickness, he was allowed to come visit.
So this girl has a crazy attack of laughing. And then her boyfriend shows up and she's just fine?
Well, or more like she's allowed to see her boyfriend.
So it's about the...
While she's... I mean, the real common association with this sickness is that it's a teenage girl disease.
Only to girls.
It is for
girls. Girls.
It only happens to girls.
Yeah. A girl, 16 to 20 years old,
crying and sometimes laughing.
I talked to a school nurse, a psychiatric nurse from the local hospital, a doctor, and they all said vaguely the same thing. The reason it happened was that it had something to do with the transitions of adolescence.
And just out of curiosity, you're a girl?
Mm-hmm.
Is there something about this that makes sense to you?
There is, yes, out of curiosity, yeah, mm-hmm. Sure. Just, you know, you're just beginning to kind of negotiate your relationship to sex and boys, and there's these new pressures and these new responsibilities that are really challenging.
It's funny, like, boys don't have that problem. We just want to have sex.
And it's a crisis for girls.
Yeah.
So it does kind of make sense.
Okay.
But it doesn't really explain anything about 1962 to me.
Why not?
Because in 1962, it wasn't just teenage girls.
Mm.
It was boys. It was men. It was villages full of people of all ages. So what explains that? Fortunately for me, I had found a woman who was there.
Hello.
That's Gertrude.
Gertrude is in her 50s. She's got short, loose curls and a big smile. And in 1962, when the laughter epidemic struck her village, she got it too.
6 years old.
That's young.
Very young.
Do you remember?
I remember, yes.
Yeah, she remembers seeing hundreds of people coming down with this strange affliction, and it took many forms. Some were laughing.
Everlasting laughter. Then laugh and cry at the same time.
At the same time.
What happened to me was I was not able to talk, crying only, and then my eyes were closed as if there is a gum on my eyes. So my mom, she carried me on her back.
And they walked. They walked over the hills, her mom carrying her on her back for hours. And along the way, they ran into other people. Boys, girls, men.
Even older ones.
Dozens of people, all headed the same way, laughing, crying.
Oh, grabbing their skin.
Where were they going?
To the witch doctor.
To this witch doctor?
They didn't know what else to do.
When I arrived,
hundreds of people, she says, converged on this woman's tiny hut.
So they were going inside turn by turn. In the house, they were full. They had to stay outside. There were many.
Because there were so many people going to the witch doctor.
Yeah, there were many people. It was terrible.
What do you think the problem was?
Okay. I was asking my elder once, what was the problem? They said that it was something like a spiritual event.
Yeah.
Because 1 year before this problem, there were certain insects.
She said that about a year before the laughter epidemic, caterpillars had shown up.
They were breeding and they spread all over the ground.
There was this huge infestation. One of the explanations was that the people who got sick had walked across the caterpillars.
They stepped on these caterpillars.
And had killed them.
As a result,
the spirit of the caterpillars were possessing them.
They started to get this feeling.
Now, she sort of dismissed that as not scientific.
But maybe these caterpillars had a certain bacteria which affected their brain.
Okay, this explanation that there was some sort of bacteria or virus, I had already checked it out. I'd gone to the government hospital
to
talk to the medical officer.
In short,
they'd never found any physical cause for this.
There's not any medical importance which was found.
I'd even talked to a lab technician.
I'm a laboratory technician.
Who had checked blood samples in 1962.
Everything was negative.
They'd tested the water supply, the food supply.
Negative, negative.
So that the caterpillar seemed like a dead end. So I tried a different tack. I asked Gertrude what was going on then at that time in your village. And she thought about it for a while, and then she said, well, of course, there was
independence.
For 40 years, Tanzania had been a British colony, but in 1961, Tanzania had declared independence.
And this was right before?
Just weeks before that first girl started laughing.
Gertrude, I don't know much about independence. What can you tell me about independence?
What I experienced by then was people going around, singing, beating drums, dancing because they are independent. But apart from that, I can't tell more about independence because I was very, very young.
Gertrude said that she knew somebody who would remember more, someone I should talk to.
Man Sospita.
A 71-year-old man. Mr. Sospita?
Was assisting the witch doctor.
He was the witch doctor's assistant.
Maybe this man can help more
than
I.
Do you want some coffee or some breakfast here first?
On my very last day in Bukoba, Raymond and I sat down with this man, witch doctor's assistant, at a restaurant near my hotel. He's a tiny guy, gray hair and big oversized suit, and he filled in some of the missing pieces.
We tell him I want to know what he remembers.
I asked him about the independence celebration that Gertrude described, the ones just before the laughter epidemic. He painted a very different picture.
I remember.
He was 26 at the time. And after the parties died down, he said change swept through his village. Immediately following independence, Tanzania became a socialist state, and the new government was out to create a new world order. Land changed hands. They abolished the local clans.
The president, President Nyerere, after the independence.
And the local religions.
He banned the spirit.
This was the brand new age. This was the new era. You were supposed to have a modern belief system. The entire village was being asked to abandon the way that they had worshipped for thousands of years. Within weeks, the churches moved in. Suddenly, they had business. Catholic church opened up on one side of the street, now Lutheran on the other.
Christians were telling people, convincing villagers to join different religions.
They even handed out money. It was kind of a bidding war for souls. All of it was too new, too fast. He even remembers this one particular night when everyone in his village gathered outside and stared at the sky.
They had been told that was the end of life on earth. At midnight, everybody was out the whole night waiting to see whether they are going to die.
He told me we saw the heavens and the moon slamming into each other.
What they saw, it was the eclipse of the moon. That's what they saw.
An eclipse of the moon.
Yeah.
Looking back on it, maybe that was the end of the world, of that old world. Here's this guy, the witch doctor's assistant, who introduced himself to me actually as an elected official.
He
made this jump in his life. That was a particular period of time when everybody was making this big jump, all of a sudden.
So you think that this laughing epidemic had something to do with an avalanche of newness?
Yeah. Of all the explanations I came across, this is the one that makes the most sense to me.
It's plausible to me, too, because you've got a loss of religion, an arrival of a new religion, a loss of a political culture, a new leader. That's a very large pileup of change all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And, of course, everyone's a little bit scared, so there's a quiet, and then someone starts to laugh.
You know, who knows why that first girl went crazy and why she started making crazy laughing noises. But it was like people saw that, and they were like, oh, God, I feel like that, too.
It sounds like laughter, but you could think of it as...
It's like a collective scream or something.
Yeah.
Like the entire society was a 16-year-old girl. In 1962.
Radiolab producer, Ellen Horn. Well, that's it for us, at least for now. For more information on the Tanzanian laugh epidemic or anything else you heard in this hour, visit radiolab.org. I'm Jad Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Krulwich.
We'll see you later.
Radiolab is produced by Jad Abumrad, Lulu Miller, Rob Christensen, Ellen Horn, Elizabeth Giddens. Production support by Sally Herships, Sarah Pellegrini, Ariel Lasky, Heather Radke, Michael Orion McManus, and Soren Wheeler. Thanks to Gail Cleaver, Beth Barak, Bingo Knightley, Emily Weber, and Sharon Count. Shh. And finally, special thanks to Casey Cromwell. Radiolab is produced by WNYC, New York Public Radio, and distributed by NPR National Public Radio.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.